I mentioned it off the top how much I enjoyed your piece on sportsnow.ca, but here's the final line, the final sentence. It gets its own paragraph. Keep your calendars clear because it could be tomorrow. That was written yesterday. So it is now tomorrow. CJ, could it be today?
Well, certainly based on everything we heard from Kyle Dubas, it would be impossible to conclude otherwise. I mean, that was a pretty fascinating media availability yesterday for me because, you know, the Leafs, you know, we could all call up Cap Friendly. We can all see that you know, making a trade and understanding the situation, why there's complications, might be difficult. And, you know, Kyle was very unequivocal about what he intends to do. And, you know, I think it's hard to listen to that and not at least reach the conclusion that he knows something could happen. And, you know, I do think he's incentivized to make it happen literally at the next possible available opportunity, which is today. So, you know, I don't know of anything specific that's going to come down, but, you know, the way that he spoke, the conviction he had, and I think, you know, the desire to get someone, you know, into the Leafs system as soon as possible all conspires to say that something's got to happen here soon.
Yeah, and also just looking back at the guy's track record, there was a reminder yesterday. We brought it up off the top of the show how the one thing I don't think he gets enough credit for is how aggressive he has been at the deadline. We kind of clown on him because he's done the Patan and Malgin things, but ultimately, he 3 to 4 weeks out, he's been the deadline ruiner for you and Elliot sitting at the desk, where he makes the Jack Campbell trade weeks before the deadline. He makes the Jake Muzzin trade weeks before the deadline and kind of saps that content and makes it feel as though he hasn't done that. So part of me thinks, hey, this is business as usual for Kyle Dubas in terms of wanting to get out ahead of the market, but the one little nugget from it that I took away was not a sense of frustration, maybe, but something close to that, where he goes, it takes two teams to make a deal. It's pretty clear the Leafs are out there saying, we'll give you a top prospect, we'll make one of these moves, we want to make one of these things now. Doesn't it feel like the question is, when are the sellers ready to move?
No, because I think the Leafs are going to have to overpay, frankly. You know, I just think that there's no way around that. Because of this quarantine issue, the U.S. teams that are selling, and that's primarily what we're talking about here, you know, they have no reason to lower the prices right now. They know that they have these Canadian teams in a spot where they want to make these deals soon, and they have the luxury, if those deals don't come together, to say, all right, well, the trade deadline's still not for 3.5 weeks, and, you know, U.S. teams, some of them won't even have a one-day quarantine if the player can drive from city to city. Like, if Kyle Palmieri gets traded from New Jersey to the island, he could play that night for the Islanders. And that's a huge difference when it comes to making deals. And so I just think there's almost no way around it that if you're in the Leafs position, you're probably going to have to expend a bit more, you know, in terms of assets to get someone. I would say it doesn't mean it's not worth doing. Because if you believe in this season, if you believe in the importance of getting a player sooner than later to get that person, you know, through the quarantine, but also comfortable in his new environment. And the fact that you've said you're looking for rental players, I mean, the clock's ticking. And so I don't think it's ticking in his favor or any of the other Canadian GMs. But, you know, you're right. He's been decisive. I don't know how anyone honestly could really, I mean, you might quibble with individual moves as you would with any GM, but I think Kyle's shown a ton of conviction. I think he's been very upfront when he speaks about what he intends to do and goes and does it. I mean, remember even the offseason. He set the market. He got more for Kasperi Kapanen than anyone who made trades afterwards. You know, the teams that waited longer were giving away good players for third-round picks, and he got a first-rounder and a decent prospect in Philip Hallander and made that move, you know, before the market had really established itself. And so, you know, I think that it is his MO to be very clear in his conviction, to identify what he wants to do and to get it done.
Okay. I'm not trying to get off track here because I agree with a lot of what you said, and I still think that the Kapanen trade was a good one and that Kapanen's fit on this team was not great. And he's got, I think, 7 even strength goals on the Penguins this season, so it doesn't look as good. But I mentioned the irony a couple of days ago of getting that first round pick that you're now hoping that you could potentially flip into a guy like a Kapanen, where it's someone who can play up in your top six and provide some scoring and give you a forward that has a little bit of bite, all the things that Kapanen does. And not to get revisionist in whether or not we should be criticizing him, like it should be, this is mostly going to be a looking forward segment, but I do think that this ripple effect, this does have an interesting ripple effect. Instead of moving Alex Kerfoot because they saw his value as a centerman, they move the other two guys who are wingers, Kapanen and Johnsson, who both make less money and who I think both have 1 year less of term remaining. He keeps Kerfoot, and Kerfoot ends up being a winger, and frankly, not a very good one. One where they're clearly looking to upgrade at either one of his spots. They would love to get a top six left winger, someone who could supplant him and push him down the lineup, or they'd love to get a third line center, someone who takes the spot he was supposed to have. How much of this deadline comes down to the fact that they didn't trade this guy in the offseason when they may have had a better chance, or were there even suitors for him? Do you think there were even there was even a market for him at the time? How big is that ripple?
I think you're mixing a few rails there. Like, they would have traded Kerfoot at the time they traded Kapanen and Johnsson, but the market bore out what it bore out. And, you know, obviously he does have some value because he's played center. But, you know, I think they've been consistent even back to last year's trade deadline in at least fielding calls on him. And, you know, I think that they made the moves they could. I don't see this as bad cap management. I mean, look, Kasperi Kapanen has one more year on his deal. You were trading him while you could get maximum return for him. You know, the longer you went down that road, you're either going to have to resign him or you're trading less of him. And I think that the bloom comes off the rose in terms of what you get as a result. And if you end up trading Rodion Amarov now, you know, the prospect they drafted with the first-round pick they got for Kapanen, I don't see that as... To me, it's not like doubling down on a bad bet. I think it's just a natural evolution of what they're doing. They traded Kapanen and Johnsson to free up space to improve the blue line. And while obviously the last stretch of games hasn't gone well for the team, I think we'd mostly be in agreement that they've made improvements on that blue line, you know, since September when they made the Kapanen deal. And so I just think this is natural evolution. I don't think they're chasing their tail at all, to be honest. And really, as I say, going back a year is when they recognize they probably weren't going to be able to pay those guys $3 to $4 million as, you know, the Kapanen, Johnsson, and Alex Kerfoot cap hits are now. It's not to say Kerfoot's gone at this deadline. I think he's the most obvious piece to move if it's a money-in, money-out type of transaction. But, you know, he still has some value. It's not a pure salary dump. You know, I think the issue if you're Toronto is, you know, you're probably losing him to Seattle in the expansion draft if you're not trading him now. And so, you know, it makes some sense, I think, to explore his value as part of these series of moves. And so, look, it's not going to ever be state. Like, when you pay the top guys what you're paying them, I think it's going to require the GM to always be moving around the other parts. And you know, there's going to be no stability for the bottom 20 on this roster. It's only the top five that get that luxury.
I'd say the bigger ripple was, yeah, the Barry trade in general, or the Kadri trade, however you want to phrase it.
Yeah, but they gave a fourth-line guy, a third-line guy, $3.5 million. Like,
sorry,
you know,
ahead,
like
CJ?
That's what Kerfoot is, you know? So, like, my point is not so much that they shouldn't have traded Kapanen or that they shouldn't have traded Johnsson. My point is just that I think that, yeah, if you were looking at a time where you probably could have gotten a money-in, money-out trade for Kerfoot, it would have been last offseason. And that the gamble to make him a third-line center has clearly not worked out. And now they need it. Like, he hasn't been that guy. He's not worth $3.5 million in this cap reality.
Look, what hasn't worked out? I think what hasn't worked out is they don't have a second-line winger. You know, I don't think him as a third-line center was the problem. I think they've had to move him up because they don't have someone to play above him. You know, if they can somehow make a trade where they get a second-line winger, I think he's back to being their third-line center, honestly.
For sure.
Without shipping out. But I don't know if you can make that all work cap-wise, frankly. Like, I don't see it. I don't see that being a fit.
All right, so I connected some dots earlier, and you mentioned Amarov. We've already shipped him out of town. Like,
yeah, he's
hardly
in every
knew
trade.
You. Rodion, it was a fun time when you were selected, and maybe
Rodion's on the table. We got Rodion on the table.
So it's one thing for Kyle Dubas to be talking about him when he says top prospect. Yes, those guys are dangled in trades. The other guys that are top prospects that have seen the National Hockey League level, obviously the fan base has a closer connection to in Robertson and Sandin. Do you think those are also guys that he's talking about? And two, he also said this is a weird season where you're actually prioritizing rentals. Are we talking about giving up one of those top prospects for a rental?
Yes, yes, and yes. I think it depends on who the rental is. You know, that obviously impacts the decision. But, you know, the Leafs have a chance to win the Stanley Cup. I don't think, you know, what's obvious to me is they're not worried about next year. And, you know, I don't think they should be, frankly, in this position. And I know that's going to be hard because there's nothing any fan base loves more than the next guys that are coming that haven't screwed up in front of your eyes yet, that haven't maybe not developed as quick or whatever. Like, I get it. And I think fans have right to be excited about all those players. But, you know, the Leafs, they're smart. They're not taking anyone off the table. It's about using all the assets they can to try to make the team as good as it can be heading into this year's playoffs. They're not just going to give those guys away, but they're in play. And so, you know, we'll see what they can come up with them. But I think that should get the attention of other teams, frankly. I mean, I don't see very many NHL teams get this bold in terms of doing this sort of thing. I mean, it's always we want to add, but we don't want to give you our best stuff. Well, the Leafs are willing to give you some of their best stuff if you're willing to play ball with them.
Yeah. So we keep coming back to the same name. I think it's the same name Elliot wrote down on the piece of paper. It's been the same name forever and ever now, which is Michael Granlund. So we had Mike Feuda on yesterday. He basically said it's going to be really tough for the Leafs to get top-end roster players because they don't have guys on their roster they can give up, and that prospect values are down, especially when you consider the Leafs' best chip, Rasmus Sandin, has been hurt, and there's not a lot of clarity on the injury at this point. Is Granlund kind of the name that you're still circling, or are there some other names that are starting to pop up in the rumor mill that weren't there before?
Well, I mean, we've all heard, like, I've heard seven names with the Leafs. You hear Alex Alfalo, you hear Nick Foligno, you hear Granlund. Like, I don't know who it is, honestly. And I'm not convinced it's just one of the obvious candidates here. You know, I think the Leafs are the kind of organization that smartly goes through the entire league and literally thinks of every possible fit there could be. You know, like they're playing chess on a different level than we are in terms of understanding what they can do with their cap situation and considering every possible move. And so, you know, I'll be honest, I don't know who the player is. I think that Granlund makes some sense. But, you know, I'm not sure I didn't hear Mike Puta's interview with you guys, so I might be misunderstanding what you said there. Well, you know, like some of us got to work from 10 to 12, you know?
Yeah, us.
I was just going to say, yeah, that's what we were doing, too.
Yeah, but if I was a listener, it'd be hard to be doing both. so I don't know exactly what he said, but I still think the Leafs have a lot to get a player done. I mean, here's the other way around. I mean, the players we're talking about mostly here are rental forwards. I mean, what are the other teams bidding for these guys going to offer? I mean, how many of them have a Rasmus Sandin equivalent? You know, and I think that's the guy. I don't think the Leafs are looking to move Rasmus Sandin. I mean, we could all easily project him in their lineup as soon as he can play here. But, you know, I think the Leafs got a lot to move on. I mean, they're putting first-round picks on the table and prospects and even a roster player, potentially someone like Alex Kerfoot. That's more than most contenders are willing to give up at this point in time to add to their lineup.
No, it wasn't that he said that they weren't willing to sacrifice those guys. It was just that in a normal season, prospects are worth more than they are right now because of the uncertainty of the amount of play they've had over the last couple of seasons. And that if a team, most specifically when we were exploring the idea of them trying to get in on a high, high, high-end guy like a Philip Forsberg, he just basically made the case of that you don't move a player like Philip Forsberg for a couple of guys that are maybes, even if they are top prospects like the Robertsons or the Sandins in the Leafs organizations. And that, it's not the best year to have picks and prospects like other years where those two things would have been, a near certainty to get you types of guys like that. So, we're in a spot right now where, it's clear. They're swinging for the fences. They're looking for those names. There's some of them that you don't think are out there. We can go back and forth all day on who we think the best targets are, but they're obviously doing it. Do you think that there's going to be a little bit more of a priority on some depth defensemen then, though? Because, all right, so maybe they trade Sandin, which makes it obvious that they need somebody, or he's not ready to go health-wise for quite some time. They did move Mikko Lehtinen. We mentioned Martin Marincin's name. You don't really want to see him. I don't think you want to see Calle Rosén. I don't know what Kivi Halme is. Do you think that that's also going to be something they address? Somebody who can at least fill in if there's an injury? Because they kind of look thin behind their six guys right now.
They do, but, you know, it just comes down to cap room. Like, I think it's clear that getting a forward is what they want to do, and that might eat up all the cap space. I think it's that simple. But, you know, you can't rule out a defenseman either. I mean, I saw Elliott had 31 thoughts, you know, that he thinks they're out on Ekholm. I keep hearing that they're still tied to Ekholm, and I'm certainly not going against Elliott. I'm just saying that we're hearing conflicting things on that. You know, I don't know if that's on the table or not, but certainly they're, I don't think that they could say, oh yeah, we're totally done at D. It's just, you know, you have to make a wish list and then you have to be realistic about what you can get done. And I mean, what's fascinating to me, I don't know if you guys heard any Mark Bergevin's comments yesterday, the Leafs and the Habs are in like shockingly similar cap positions. And Mark Bergevin's comments are basically like, I can't do anything, guys. I've got no flexibility. And Kyle was quite clear that, you know, he expects to make trades, that he wants them to happen soon. I mean, it was two different ways of looking at almost the exact same cap situation. I guess the difference being, you know, the guy that Montreal would be moving is Paul Byron to create cap room. You know, at this stage of his career, he doesn't have as much value as Kerfoot does. But, you know, other than that, they're in shockingly similar spots. And I do think that the Leafs have to look at improving anywhere they can because, you know, this is an all-in season.
But like you said, it takes two to tango, and it takes two to make a deal today, like we're hopeful of happening, especially after reading your piece. But he also mentioned the uncertainty of a player that quarantines for 14 days and you get him at the deadline. You have like 6 or 7 regular season games before they have to go into a 7-game series with so much on the line for this franchise, considering the year. Do you think the prices... The Maple Leafs are unwilling to do some of the high price negotiating that they appear willing to do now, the closer we get to that deadline? Or is there a point where, like, we're at the deadline, you can't even bother to do that because there's so much uncertainty with a player that's been on the shelf for 14 days and the run-up before playoffs? Like, how do you view this going a little bit closer to the deadline?
Well, the closer you get to the deadline, you're not trading your top prospects, I don't think. Or the first round pick goes off the table. You know, I have trouble imagining the sort of deals I think we're sort of hinting at here that those would be consummated involving the Leafs on April 12th. It makes no sense. I mean, if you're getting a rental player, so, you know, as Kyle mentioned, he's coming out of quarantine April 27th or 28th. You know, even as good a shape as these guys are in, if you don't skate for 14 days, like how many days after that before you can even play once you get skating again? You know, the regular season ends May 8th. You know, if that person's not playing games until May 3rd for you, like why would you, as much as you want to potentially load up for a 2-month playoff run, it might be one round again. So it might be 3 regular season games and 7 playoff games. You know, no matter how big the name is or good the player is, I just think it doesn't make sense for the Leafs. They're less incentivized to give up the big names the closer they get to the deadline. And that's kind of the tango, essentially. You know, I know from speaking to some other teams, not the Leafs, that they think the prices will come way down on April 12th because the sellers aren't going to have the same number of buyers as usual. Like some teams by that point will just say it's not even worth bringing players in at that late a date. And so, you know, I guess that's where the opportunity, if you're a seller, I think, with the Leafs is you have to understand and believe that their offers are going to diminish significantly, even as a week passes. Like, you know, I think that every day is important right now because of the circumstances around this season and then the quarantine and all that.
Do you think that a team like Ottawa or even Vancouver will ever enter the conversation of, hey, these guys might be willing to move some pieces because they know the other Canadian buyers are in such a bind when it comes to quarantines?
I think they will. I just don't see a lot there that I would covet. You know what I mean? Like, I don't see rental players on either of those rosters that, you know, I think the Leafs should be tripping over themselves to get. You know, that's probably the biggest issue. And I guess maybe under this weird circumstance, you just take one of their players because it does, you know, potentially make it a little bit easier with quarantine rules and the like. But, you know, unfortunately, those teams don't really have the main players that I think the Leafs would really want.
Yeah. I just look at, like, a team like the Canucks.
Kyle Chernyuk became a Leaf. I mean, Kyle Dubas said it yesterday. It was kind of just like, hey, he's here. He's in Ottawa. He can just drive here. Let's see what we can do. Let's see what this guy is.
Yeah. I personally think they know what he is. We know what he is, but sure. I guess if they're throwing Patans and Agostino and all the other things that they've thrown at the bottom of the lineup, I don't really give too much of a crap about it. It's not like I'll be upset if they throw Galchenyuk in and take a flyer. They've thrown Patan, whatever. So, sure, I just think a team like Vancouver to me is super interesting. Not even necessarily for Toronto, but just to have guys like Sutter and Pearson who are those rentals. I don't know who else. I think Edler is too. So to be able to just say, hey, we've got these kind of pieces, a Hamonic, whatever, someone who you might value, someone who you might look at and say there's no quarantine. But that would also mean that they're saying we're out of the race, or that they would take that criticism of being out of the race when they're not totally out of it. But it could probably help their franchise a lot given where they're at and the season they just had. I find them to be – like Ottawa has nothing, let's be honest. They don't have a single rental player or a piece that I think would go and help another team right now. But there's at least some guys on Vancouver you could talk yourself into if they did swing that direction.
Yeah, for sure. And look, Vancouver's got 3.5 weeks here to be very out of the race, and I think that's what's going to happen. I mean, I don't think particularly highly of their team. I know they won in Ottawa the other night. Like, they got thoroughly outplayed. You know, it's just a lost season. They don't have enough depth around their star players, and they got to be realistic about where they're at.